Hey, Jen, I got a knock-knock joke for you.
Go ahead.
Knock-knock.
Who's there?
Why?
Why who?
Why do people buy? My amazing ebook is available right now, and even better, it's completely free. Figuring out why people buy is 1,000 times more powerful than knowing how to sell. And this ebook will give you the insight that will allow you to uncover the genuine buying motive of your customer every single time.
Plus, and this is no joke, you don't have to knock down any doors to buy it. It's free. And the link is in the show notes.
I can't let previous performance dictate current performance. Then the second thing is, and this is probably what's most important, is high performers learn to put all of their attention into the only two things in the world they have 100% control over 100% of the time. And that's their effort and their attitude. They learn to let everything else go.
Where do we start this? An answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls.
I'm tweeting that puppy.
Okay. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Sell or Die. Wherever you are in the world, we are here to help you. This is America's and the world's most popular information about sales and personal development. And I'm Jeffrey Gittimer. I authored The Little Red Book of Selling and The Sales Manifesto.
And I'm Jen Gluckow, founder and author of Sales in a New York Minute. What's up, everyone? Welcome to the show. We are glad you're here because today we have an amazing episode.
Today's guest is the great Alan Stein. Alan is a world-renowned coach, author, and corporate keynote speaker. He spent 15-plus years working with the highest-performing basketball players on the planet, and you'll find out who they are, and now teaches audiences how to utilize the same strategies in business that elite athletes use to perform at a world-class level. That's coming up, but first we have our five-star review.
That's right. This week's five-star review comes from the Pauly Mac.
Oh my gosh, I love that.
Pauly Mac writes, "This is a must-listen-to podcast. Jeffrey and Jennifer both bring a different style of sales leadership, and their chemistry works so well together. I agree. They invite world-class guests on their show that bring us how to grow in sales and, yes, make money. As a new salesperson and outside sales, this podcast has helped me tremendously. I look forward to listening every day."
What
thank
a brilliant
you,
guy, the Pauly.
You know, the Pauly Mac, we love you.
Yeah, we swear to
and
God.
And, Doug, you have a really good ability to read on our podcast.
Yeah.
That, no, for real. Like,
I learned at a very young age.
You sound... Okay, you take a compliment for shit. You sound great.
Thank you very much. And you guys sound great when you send in these reviews. So a reminder, send in your five-star reviews to iTunes, and we will read them on the show.
And now, on to Alan Stein, who believes that confidence and emotional intelligence are some of the most important traits for a sales manager to have, who explains how sales managers should use meetings like coaches call timeouts. And man, I can't wait for that. And he believes the biggest thing you can control in your presentation is how much you prepare for it. Please help me welcome the great Alan Stein.
We didn't want to give this away in your introduction, so tell us about just, you know, who are some of the famous basketball people that you've coached.
What makes my career unique is I was able to work for two high schools here in the D.C. area, DeMatha, as you just mentioned, and those two schools have produced probably a dozen guys in the NBA currently. Kevin Durant, Victor Oladipo, we've had some really good players. But then because I got to work at those two schools, those got me gigs working for Nike and Jordan Brand and USA Basketball. So then I got to work events like the LeBron James Skills Academy, and I got to do events for Kobe Bryant and Steve Nash and Stephen Curry and Kyrie Irving. So I've been able to see kind of the before picture and the after picture. I've been able to see these guys when they were 14, 15 years old, before they became household names. And then I got to observe guys that were already established players and see what made them great. So very thankful that I've been able to see it from both vantage points.
They don't play many high school basketball games on television, but they did play a couple of LeBron James basketball games when he was in Akron. And you could tell he was just going to be the most dominant player on the planet. Because at high school he could have just walked right into any pro game, and been dominant in the game and proved that, the same way that Zion Williamson is going to walk into the pros and immediately make impact. It's fun to watch those players and see what's going to happen with them. What are some of the players that you actually dribbled with?
Well, I was the strength and conditioning coach at Montrose Christian here in Rockville, Maryland, which is where Kevin Durant graduated from. So I got a chance to meet Kevin when he was 15 years old. And
wow,
it was neat because I remember after watching him play for maybe 3 or 4 minutes, it was very clear to me this kid had a huge passion for the game. Like, he is playing his tail off, but he had a smile on his face the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
He was very fundamentally sound. Like, his shooting mechanics and his footwork were pristine for a 15-year-old. And he also had a very high basketball IQ. He understood the game on a cerebral level that would rival most coaches. And those three things mixed with his humility, his coachability, he was a gym rat. You know, I just knew that he had the makings of a future great player because he had both the tangibles and the intangibles in place.
He could also shoot the eyes out of the basketball, so...
Yes, he could. Yeah, when you're 6'10 and can do that at the high school level, that's incredibly helpful.
So what are some of the mindset things that you see in successful up-and-coming basketball players, and how does that play a role in their career?
The number one is they never get bored with the basics. That they have a very strong appreciation for the fundamentals. You know, when you talk about a basketball player, I always use footwork as an example because everything in the game revolves around the feet. I mean, every shot, every pass, every rebound, every defensive slide involves the feet. So players that work on having incredibly efficient footwork are going to improve their skill level across the board. And the best players, no matter how good they get, they never abandon the fundamentals and they never abandon the basics. They know that that's the house at which the whole thing is built. And I've noticed that in high performers in sales, high performers in business, high performers in any walk of life will always trust, respect, and appreciate the basics.
If you go to a Warriors game, you'll see more people show up for Steph Curry's pregame dribbling drill than show up for any other thing pregame in the NBA. I mean, he's just unbelievable. And why did it take the NBA 50 years to have that one kid do it? I don't understand that. Why didn't everybody do that?
Yeah, well, you know, I had a chance to meet Steph. Funny enough, it was in 2007 after his freshman year at Davidson. So this was actually before he blew up. This is before anybody knew who he was. And you could tell then how serious he took his preparation. And he'll be the first to tell you there's nothing magical about his warm-up. The magic comes from he's found a warm-up through trial and error and high self-awareness that gets him prepared to play at the highest level, that gets his mindset ready to compete, that gets him dialed into the present. So it's not as if any player could go mimic his warm-up and then have the same result. He's just so in tune with his game that he knows that's what he needs to do. And the most impressive thing that I learned about Steph is the relationships between the standards that you set and the outcomes that you desire. And when I had met Steph, the first time I met him, this was just based on sheer proximity, he asked if I'd rebound for him because he said, "I don't leave the gym until I swish 5 free throws in a row." Well, if any of your listeners haven't shot a basketball before, let me tell you, that is a very high standard. I mean, a swish by definition is a perfect shot. And Steph would not leave the gym until he swished 5 in a row, which means he could swish 4 in a row, hit a little bit of the rim on the 5th one. It still goes in. He's still 5 for 5. He's still mathematically perfect, but that wasn't good enough for him, and he would start over. And if memory serves, I don't think it ever took him longer than 12 or 15 minutes to swish five in a row. And I firmly believe that when he retires, he'll go down in history as the greatest shooter that the game has ever seen. And it's important that people realize that's not by luck. That's not by accident. That's not because his dad played in the NBA. It's because he's willing to hold himself to an unparalleled standard. And therefore, he gets some pretty magical results. So that's another nugget that even folks in sales should be able to pull from, that the standards of what we're willing to accept are going to dictate our...
And we go to basketball games. The only guy that we would go to watch pregame drills was Bill Bradley.
Mm.
And Bill Bradley would start at, and there was no three-point play.
I know.
So Bill Bradley would stand outside that three-point circle, shoot one from the dead corner, and then take a step to the right, a step to the right, a step to the right, and go all the way around the basketball court. And not, he'd have to make it from that point or he wouldn't take the step. And then he'd go to the foul line and shoot 25 straight foul shots.
Wow.
He went down as one of the greatest foul shooters of all time. He shot in the 90 percentiles.
Absolutely.
Okay. And nobody else did that. Like, dude, it ends up being Bill fucking Bradley and all the other guys on that Princeton team you never heard of again. Maybe then their coach, whose name I forget also, but he shit. I'll think of it before we're done the show. Huh? No. Princeton coach Bill Cannon. Anyway. They made it to the finals. If he didn't, him and Larry Bird both broke a finger. So the Cassie Russell and Magic Johnson could win finals. It's pretty interesting. But the challenge for Bill Bradley was he was playing against himself. He wasn't playing against somebody else. Those were his basics. Those were his fundamentals. And he never warmed up for a game without those.
This is Christy Walters.
And I'm Jeff Bajorek. Together, we host the Why and the Buy podcast, and we are pumped to be a part of the Sell or Die podcast network.
The Why and the Buy is a show about tackling sales and leadership challenges that salespeople and small business owners face every single day.
While we have a lot of fun doing it.
I'm a dad. I'd like to think I'm not a terrible dad, but I'm a dad, and I make bad jokes.
I love it. That's what happens when you start a podcast.
If you like making a lot of money and being super successful, then sure, I suppose.
Jeff and I have been there. We've lived through it, and we're here to share the lessons we've learned. So subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, Overcast, Stitcher, or wherever you get podcasts. And remember, when you know your why.
Your hows and your whats get much better. We'll talk to you again real soon.
And mic drop.
So never getting bored with the basics. Is that something that it only comes naturally to people, or can people be trained?
I believe it's a learned behavior. And I think it certainly starts when kids are younger and they have that modeled for them. You know, I mean, one of the people automatically assume that because Steph's dad was an NBA sharpshooter for 12 years, that that's why Steph is so good. And that's only part of the equation. I think the best gift his dad ever gave him was modeling how important it is to put in purposeful practice and to get reps. That at a very young age, he's bringing Steph and his brother Seth to the gym and watching him shoot. And they're making the connection that my dad goes to the gym for hours every day to put in practice, and he's a pretty good shooter. And they made that connection. And then they realized that, hey, if we want to be good shooters, then we have to put in reps. So that was the best thing he was taught. And even using your Bill Bradley example, I mean, it's shocking to me that no one tried to mimic that, that no one said, wow, this guy's a really good shooter. Why don't I adopt a similar philosophy for my pregame warmup? It's amazing to me that these things are so basic, but acknowledge that they're not very easy to do.
But you just skimmed over a word that I want to go back to, which was purposeful practice. And like my assumption is if you're going to practice, it's always purposeful, but you're implying that it's not. So how do you make set that intention so that every practice is purposeful? And how can salespeople relate to that?
Purposeful practice requires a few things. One, it means you have a very distinct intention. There's a very specific goal with what it is that you're trying to do. Mm-hmm. In Bill Bradley's case, I'm going to go around the three-point arc and I'm going to sidestep 2 feet, but I can only move to the right after I make one. That's very different than just casually going out there and shooting for 30 minutes, just kind of randomly doing things. Purposeful practice also involves a feedback loop, which in many times is incredibly helpful to have a coach or a mentor or a teammate or someone that can help you see your blind spots.
Or a video. For example, or a video.
Yeah, video. Exactly. So if I'm working on my shooting mechanics, I might not be able to see if I'm doing anything incorrectly because I just don't have that vantage point. I'm the one doing it. So having someone that can say, Alan, you know, keep your elbow in or follow through a little higher is incredibly helpful. And as Jeffrey just said, video is a perfect tool for that. So that's what would make practice more purposeful and more deliberate than just kind of casually going through the motions. And, you know, same thing from a sales standpoint. You know, I'm a big believer in role playing and trying different scenarios and using that as your practice. So we can actually practice sales calls with the three of us. And maybe you guys have some index cards of some objections. And these are things that I'll have to overcome, what have you. But we'll be practicing with the intent to transfer these skills to eventually a real sales call that I'll do, as opposed to just kind of haphazardly throwing stuff into the wind.
That's pretty cool. And are there specific routines that you see successful athletes use on a daily basis that just helps foster their success?
The highest performers, especially in sport, are incredibly routine and creatures of habit. They've found over the course of their career, through some trial and error and certainly through some coaching and mentorship, exactly what they need to do to perform at the highest level. If I don't know if the Lakers are playing tonight, but if the Lakers were playing tonight, there's no chance that 3 or 4 hours before tip-off, LeBron is wandering the streets of LA, wondering what he's going to eat for dinner. He knows exactly what he's going to eat, when he's going to eat it, what time he reports to the arena, what stretches he's going to do. He knows all of that. Now, it's taking him some years, and in his case, you know, decades to hone that. But the point is, these guys know what they need to do to perform at the highest level. You know, I'm as a professional speaker, you know, I have my routines. I have my pregame routines and rituals.
What are they?
Tell us what they are.
Come on.
To get myself on stage to perform at the highest level. And, you know, for me, I know how much sleep I need. I know when and what to eat. You know, I do some type of exercise or something that gets the blood flowing the morning of a talk. And of course, these things will vary whether I'm giving an 8 a.m. conference opening keynote or a closing keynote. The time of day depends. But I have a series of things I do. I have some breathing exercises. I take a cold shower, which kind of invigorates me. I listen to a few different songs, many of which have explicit lyrics, while I'm getting dressed. You know, I always shower and get dressed a certain period of time before I go speak because I want to keep things as consistent as possible because I don't control the atmosphere. I don't control the audience. There's so many things that I don't control. So I want to have as much control over my preparation as possible so that when I step out on that stage, I feel prepared because I know that there's been some consistency to it.
Cold shower.
It's never fun, but boy, it'll invigorate you. It's just ready to roll.
I want to throw something at you. I'd like to have $1,000 for every time Tiger Woods went to a practice driving or a practice tee after he shot a round of golf, and I'd be a millionaire.
Yes, you would.
He took the game to another level in the same way that Bill Bradley took it or Steph Curry takes it, and that's why he was one of the greatest of all time. He took practice seriously and took his own skill level seriously to a point where he was willing to sacrifice whatever social niceties were available to him in exchange for, I got to hit more golf balls. I hit too many to the left or too many to the right or not straight enough or not far enough or whatever, and worked on his game with his coach.
Yeah. Oh, and that's the key part that you just hit. I mean, what you said obviously was right on point and insightful. But one of the things that made Tiger different from what I've read, I've actually never met him, is he didn't just want coaching. He craved coaching. Mm-hmm. Nothing would make him happier than finding a competent enough coach that could find something that he needed to tweak in his swing. Because his mindset was, I'm pretty darn good right now. And if someone can make me even better, then I'll be unbeatable. And he was always looking for someone that could help with that. And he never thought good was good enough, or in his case, great was great enough. He was always looking for someone that could find something that he could do just, you know, a fraction of a percent better. Because when you're as good as Tiger Woods was in his heyday, a fraction of a percent is a huge increment. Mm-hmm.
For sure. So I want to go back to what you just said about consistency and routines and having all that, because it made me wonder for our diehards, our listeners, what kind of consistent routine do you have prior to your sales meetings? What do you do every single time so that you can control that piece of it, your prep of it, before you walk in to visit a customer? And, you know, it got me thinking that sometimes that kind of stuff is hard, because sometimes you might have a sales meeting at home. Other days you may be traveling to that sales meeting. And so the same for you with speaking. So how do you control the consistency, for example, of your food when you may have no idea what kind of restaurants or food accessibility is going to be nearby?
Yeah, I mean, you nailed it with that. And I want to say, too, that preparing and habits and rituals and routines, this is not the same thing as a superstition. I'm not saying that, you know, right. Hey,
wear the same underwear a week.
Yeah, I'm going to wear my lucky socks. I'm going to get the sale. This is about fine tuning. And it does. It takes time, which is why I would expect someone that's been in professional sales for 20 years to be better at it than someone that's just started. And I know there's such things as natural talent and charisma and all that, but it takes time. And really, I mean, the oldest adage to success, it's hard for me to say it without laughing, is do more of what works and do less of what doesn't. And as you hone these routines, if you're paying attention and you have self-awareness, you'll start to figure out, hey, when I get this much sleep and I eat these foods and I do these things, I tend to perform at a higher level. Look, these are when I nailed these sales calls. And boy, when I don't do these things, it doesn't work. Or when I try these things, I'm just not at my best. I feel sluggish. And you start to figure these out. And if every day you're tightening the screws and refocusing the lens, then you're constantly making progress. And as high performers, that should be our goal, is daily progress.
So I think we have Doug back.
Yes, but don't knock the lucky socks, okay?
Yeah.
if they work, they work.
All right, Doug, what's up?
All right, Alan, I think you can hear me now.
I can, Doug.
Oh, my God. I thought
you were their imaginary
friend.
That's
technology.
Very nice
for
to hear you,
boy.
Doug.
All right. So, Alan, we've talked a lot about preparation so far. Great stuff. But I know I hear from a lot of salespeople, and they say, we're over-preparing. We're in meetings too many hours a day, and we can't get out there and sell. You're a basketball coach, or you've been a basketball coach for a long time, and you don't have a lot of time to meet with your players in the game. I mean, your timeouts are, you know, a minute, if that. So how can sales managers maximize that meeting time to get the most results?
I love the way that you brought that up, and you positioned it perfectly, because I'm a big advocate that folks in sales or folks in the business world should try to mimic what basketball coaches do for timeouts. And there's a few things to know. One, in a basketball game, you're given a finite number of timeouts. Every level, it's a little bit different. But for the sake of argument, let's just say you get 5. That's for the whole game. So if you call all 5 of them in the first 3 minutes, then you don't have any more for the rest of the game. And I like that because it creates some urgency and some scarcity. I think sales managers should have that mindset that we can't just hold meetings whenever we want, for however long we want, as many times as we want. They need to use them a little more sparingly. Second, basketball timeouts are finite in time as well. It's either a 30-second timeout, or depending on the level, it's 90 seconds or 2 minutes. But it's very finite, and it's brief and concise by design. So even if you want to pull your team off the court and talk to them for 10 minutes, you can't do that. They're very specific in time. And I think sales managers should do the same thing. How concise can we make this meeting? What is the shortest amount of time that we can meet to still effectively communicate everything that we want them to know or share or have them practice? But we shouldn't just use time as something that we have an abundance of, because we don't. So how concise can we keep these meetings, and how infrequent can we have them to still get the maximum result? And then lastly, expert coaches, when they pull their team off the court, they better prepare them for success when they go back onto the court. So a very novice coach will call timeout, will berate their team for 2 straight minutes, talking about how bad they suck and how bad they're playing. And then their team goes out and they're less likely to succeed. Not only did they not arm them with anything useful or helpful, they actually eroded their confidence. They're going back out worse than when the timeout was called originally. So a good coach will give them things that they can actually do. Hey, Jeff, you need to be able to look for the man in the corner and pass the ball there. If you do that, we're going to get a wide open look. Give them something tangible. And if sales managers would use those three things, call meetings less frequently, keep them very concise and have a very specific agenda, and then give them tangible things that they can actually use when they leave, you see them be a lot more productive.
If that coach, if that sales manager, and I like to call them coaches or leaders, not managers,
yeah,
had his 30-second timeout, he would only be able to give one idea, one tip, ask this one question, do this one thing, and get the hell out of here.
Yes.
And let him go out inspired.
Yeah, well, there's all these different methodologies on coaching, you know, give them one thing or different ways of providing the best coaching. What's your strategy when you're in the moment? I mean, you just went into it a little bit, but let's go a little bit deeper. Like, let's say you don't have just the 30 seconds. You're in the locker room or it's before the game or at practice. Like, how do you provide a deeper level of coaching?
One thing I found from a coaching standpoint, and this requires, you know, constant awareness and working on emotional intelligence, which obviously is one of the most important skill sets to have when it comes to sales. But one thing is you have to understand what it is that you're trying to accomplish and the collective confidence of the group that you're working with. And the reason I bring this up is because I noticed that a lot of novice coaches get this wrong. If I'm the coach and our team is playing really poorly in the first half, most coaches will go down and berate them during the halftime. Talk about everything they did wrong, how bad they are, how embarrassed they are, all of that stuff. And that's the exact opposite approach because their collective confidence is already low. They know that they're playing poorly, so you don't need to put sugar on top of sugar. That's when you actually need to be more positive. Find the few things they did right and get them prepared. Now, if your team plays a flawless first half, they executed, they played hard, they were great, their collective confidence is really high, you can actually scrutinize them a little bit more. You can be harder on them then because their confidence can withstand that. And you can nitpick about the little things they did wrong and tell them that they can't get complacent because they're playing well. So the reason I bring that up, same thing. If you're having a slow sales month, the last thing you want to do is put sugar on sugar and berate your team and tell them all the things they're doing wrong. And, you know, our quota was 100 this month. You guys only have 40. This is awful. I thought you guys were great salespeople. That's the wrong thing to do. So it's all about the collective psyche and understanding confidence and having the emotional intelligence to be able to weave those things in. So when your sales team is killing it, your quota was 100 and you're at 120 and the month's halfway done, then you can be even harder. You can stick, you know, you can put the stick on them even harder to make sure that they're going to continue to progress. But that's one area that I see coaches usually mess up.
Put down that coffee. We just did a segment where I videoed the five greatest sales I ever made, predominantly in New York City. And every one of them had a consistent theme. I went in with an idea. I went in with the right questions. And I had the right game plan. Those three things created outcome that was beneficial to me and also to the customer. And I think that that's where we're headed here. You want the outcome is you want that team to win the game.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And you want that team to win the game in a way where they have confidence to go to the next game. You know, they make a shot in the last second to win the game. They go, shit, we did it. And they're all pounding each other. They're all jumping on each other. It's so amazing. When you win by 20, you don't do anything. When you win by 2 in the last second, there's pylons and people screaming and dancing.
That's so true.
It's pretty interesting, a pretty interesting outcome. But I found that by going to games and watching my team win, it taught me how to be a winner. Because I watched how the coach played, I watched how the team played, and when they lost, clearly they were not doing the fundamental execution. They missed layups.
Yep.
They didn't miss three-pointers from 27 feet. They missed layups.
But how much of that is actual just mindset? Like, you're missing a shot that you get all the time. Is it because you're actually not doing the fundamental correctly, or is it because you're worried or scared in your mind and you're thinking, you know, I have to get this shot or we're going to lose the game, and you're down on yourself and then you miss the shot?
I think it's a perfect storm of all of those. Some of it, I think, comes from the anxiety of, well, what if I miss? Or I'm worried this person's going to block my shot. Or what will people think if I miss? That's part of it. Sometimes they're just lacking focus. I mean, if you keep your eyes on the rim or eyes on the backboard and you're an elite level player, you're not going to miss very many layups. But sometimes, as we all do as human beings, we're fallible. We can get distracted in the moment. The number one skill set for anyone to perform at a high level in anything they do is being in the present moment, is being where their feet are and really being in the moment. Because the only way you can win the moment is if you're in the moment. And I love what you just brought up, Jeffrey, the three things that you made sure you did before those five great sales appointments that you had. And I guarantee too, whether you realize it or not, you were probably incredibly present during those, which is why you could ask insightful questions and you're actively listening to what they're saying so that you know that you're going to be able to propose something that will solve their problem and make it the right fit. So being present is how I define mental toughness. And we would always say to our basketball players, you have to learn to play present. And when you play present and the game just flows through you, you don't usually miss layups and you don't worry about, well, what if I miss or what if they block it? It's just all part of the game.
But when you only have five timeouts and you call the sixth one, it can cost you the national championship.
Yes, Chris Webber knows all about that.
And I think that the instinct for the game has to be combined with your knowledge of the game and your ability to be present so that you understand what is the tactic that I have to use. What do I have to do now and what do I concentrate on? And calling the timeout was an instinct, but he forgot to listen to where the game was.
Yes.
I mean, he just didn't play with it. The most famous picture in all of baseball, to me, is Pete Rose backing up Bob Boone in the World Series when Bob Boone bobbled the foul tip, and Pete Rose was right there to catch the ball out of his glove, literally, to create the out and win the World Series for the Phillies. And if you look at – that's the instinctive play. Like, he didn't have to go back up Bob Boone.
Right.
He was playing third base at the time.
Yeah.
And he was just there. Like, a
but
miracle.
But it was also the fundamental play. I mean, it was the correct play.
Exactly. It was the hustle play.
He was present, and he was correct. And, yeah, so that's why he, I mean, should be in the Hall of Fame. I mean, that's is
yeah, he has my vote, but I don't get a vote.
Yes.
So when you're in the game – I don't know, you're in the game. Literally, you have fans watching you. It's like this moment, right? You know you've shown up for it. But when you're in the sale, it doesn't seem like it's as big of a deal. And so what do you recommend for salespeople to remain present? It's not like they have a sideline of fans cheering them and, you know, this like big moment happening. They're just like sort of in the routine. Okay, another sales call.
No,
another sales call.
And they're checking their phone.
Right. And or their email or their watch or whatever. And so how do you recommend they be present?
There's actually three steps to being present, and we use these in sports, we use them in business and sales. Step one is you only focus on the next play, because the next play is the only play that you can have an effect on. You can't do anything about the play that just happened. So if you're in the middle of a sales call and you ask a question and their answer or their objection or it goes in a direction that you didn't want it to, you have to do your best not to let that fluster you. Take a deep breath, course correct, and then focus on the next play. Same thing in basketball. So I missed the wide open layup. If I don't sprint back on defense, that 2-point mistake is going to become a 4-point mistake because my man is going to sprint down in the other direction and make a wide open layup because I chose to pout and I chose to jog back on defense. So we have to always move to the next play. And this is also true if I'm pitching you guys on something and the sale doesn't go through, okay, it's over. Now I've got another sales call or another appointment. I can't let previous performance dictate current performance. Then the second thing is, and this is probably what's most important, is high performers learn to put all of their attention into the only two things in the world they have 100% control over 100% of the time. And that's their effort and their attitude. They learn to let everything else go. So high performers are not worried about what their coach is yelling. They're not worried about their opponent. They're not worried about the cheerleaders or the cameras. They're not worried about the fans. They're not worried about the referees. They don't worry about anything other than their own effort and their own attitude. And then lastly, it's a focus on the process. that you have to understand that all of this is a process. And as Jeffrey's already said, when he went in prepared with those three things, that was the process. More times than not, he got the outcome that he wanted. He didn't just go in there swinging for the outcome. He went in there very methodical through preparation and figured out exactly the process required to increase the chance of getting the outcome he wanted. And that's what it means to be in the present moment. Focus on the next play, focus on what you can control, and focus on the process.
I love that.
When I went into those sales calls, I didn't realize at the time that I was shooting for outcome. It took me to become a sales writer and a sales trainer and a sales speaker to understand, oh, it was outcome that I focused on and that's how I won. But I just did it instinctively, not so much on purpose. Yeah. And I think that's what separates a lot of salespeople. They're after their quota, not after the customer and not after the proposed outcome. They're looking at, well, we can cut our price to make this happen. What's it going to take to get your business? You know, stupidest things on the planet.
And Jeffrey's a fan of the Philadelphia 76ers, so he's had to trust the process.
Oh, my God.
Yes. Man. So you said you can't let previous performance affect your next performance. Is that how you phrase it?
Yes. And here's what I use as an example. I mean, the NBA is huge with analytics. And I know we've already been talking about Curry, so we'll use him as an example. If you look up, over the course of an 82-game season, there will be a couple of games where Steph starts 0 for 7. He misses his first 7 shots. Does not happen very often because he's that good, but it does happen. The reason he'll go down in history as the greatest shooter to ever play the game is because he shoots the 8th shot as if he made the previous 7. He doesn't let the fact that he missed them have any bearing over shooting that 8th shot. In fact, he could miss 50 shots in a row, and when the game is tied with 2 seconds left, he will beg for the ball, because he always believes that the next shot is going in. And that is a incredibly challenging mindset to have, because as compassionate, empathetic human beings, I think we can all relate to, well, man, I've missed my last 7 shots. I sure hope I don't miss number 8.
Exactly.
Or what if I miss number 8? Is the coach going to take me out? Or, man, I've never missed 8 in a row. I don't want this. And we let our minds distract us. When a player like Steph, every single shot is its own shot. And that's what makes him different. See, an average player will go to the gym in the offseason and take 500 shots. Well, the name of the game is put the ball in the basket. So the three of us can take 500 shots. That's not helping anyone. So a good player will go in and they'll make 500 shots. Okay, now we're getting closer. A great player will go in, they'll make one shot 500 separate times. And that is not verbal sleight of hand or some type of semantics. It's how they approach it. This is the only shot that I'm going to shoot today. It's that important. And then after they shoot it, they think the same thing for the next shot. And that's a different mindset than, all right, I'm just here logging hours. I got to make 500 and then I can leave.
That's so interesting. And one of the things about Steph Curry that's even more unbelievable is how many times you say, holy shit, when he puts a shot in from 32 feet instead of 23 feet. And
yeah,
like it's ordinary.
Yeah.
And Alan, we've made a lot of basketball to sales analogies on this show, and they've been amazing. And something I read on your website, by the way, alanstinejr.com is the website. Something I read on your website sparked a basketball to sales analogy for me. And you write that sales is a high contact game. And I had the chance to cover the Charlotte Hornets for a couple of years, and Steve Clifford was the coach at the time. And he discussed, you need to make contact with your opponent to be an effective defensive rebounder. But he said there's two kinds of contact. There's the guy that like just puts a hand on a guy and hopes the ball comes his way. And then there's the guy that makes quality contact, that puts his whole body into someone to box out and make the defensive rebound. Is that a similar thing in sales? Is there a difference between a sort of a quality contact that leads to a quality appointment and just, you know, regular contact that leads to nothing?
I need to bring you on the road with me, Doug. That was perfect. You nailed it, man. And yes, there is. And that's one of the, I mean, I'm a huge fan of social media and so forth, but unfortunately, sometimes we can spend too much time on the surface and we think we're actually deepening relationships and improving connections and contacts when they're just these kind of surface glances. So the more depth we can get, the more we will establish trust, the more we'll create an actual forged connection. Yes, those are more important. So it's not, it's the old quality versus quantity argument. And sometimes it's easy to fall victim of thinking quantity is most important because you have a certain quota that you're trying to meet. But once again, if I'm supposed to sell 100 of whatever it is this month, I can't be worried about the 100. All I have to worry about is the next one. Because if I don't get the next one, I'll never get to the 100. And I realize that if I can make a deeper connection with you guys, I increase my chance of making this one sale. And that's what my mindset needs to be. So it's all about, yeah, forging deeper and stronger and more meaningful connections, not just how many people can I get, which on social is what we all get consumed with.
You know, right. How many views, followers?
How many likes? Yeah. And that's not right. I mean, if I was a full-time sales professional, I would rather have 1,000 connections on LinkedIn of people that I know follow my word, trust me, that want to buy from me, that like me, than to have 10,000 people that barely glance at my stuff in a newsfeed. One will feed my ego. One will actually feed my family.
Ooh, what a quote that is.
Boom.
Feed my ego versus feed my family.
Boom. Well said.
Have you tweeted it?
I haven't. That's the first time I've ever said it. So I'll give you guys a first refusal.
All right,
I love it.
I'm in the zone right now.
That is freaking phenomenal.
Do you still live in D.C.?
I do. Yeah, I'm in Gaithersburg, Maryland.
Cool.
That's like D.C., except you can get crab cakes where you live.
Exactly.
Oh, man.
So now you're not going to top that.
No, this has been awesome. We are very
glad.
I'll
see you guys later. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you for coming
on. Send copies to my agent. Correct. I always would want to know, when you're the junior, who was the senior?
My dad. And let me go ahead and tell you this. Just in the random occurrence that you meet him, I can promise you he will make the same corny joke that he makes to everyone he meets. And he will say, "I'm the original Al. He's the carbon copy," and he'll point to me. And he still thinks that's the funniest joke ever. And I let him have it.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah, because I'm a good son. But yeah, he's the senior, I'm the junior, and it stopped with me. I did not name
you. You should get business cards printed on carbon paper.
That's right.
And that way you can at least upstage him.
That would be hysterical. Yeah. That's a good birthday gift.
Like, you have a paper and it's like you write on it and rip off the carbon. It's from the old days.
Oh, man.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. So we are very grateful to have you on the show. You have helped our diehards tremendously.
For sure.
And we're going to go on your podcast as well. Can we?
I'm in. Absolutely, man. Anything I can do to support you guys. You know, I know I had mentioned it before, but I don't know if the cameras were really rolling. But I said that I've been a huge admirer and follower of yours for well over a decade. And this was back when all I was doing was basketball. So actually reading your stuff was fairly unconventional for people in the basketball space because they didn't see a connect. And I'm very thankful that I learned very early from mentors that you should always step outside of your direct industry to learn things. And your books, especially with your little half numbers, which I always loved, you know, just on how to improve your influence and your connection and how to ask questions. And I took so many things, even from your sales strategies, they made me a better coach. And I'm truly thankful. And this has been a really neat experience to at least virtually meet you after admiring you for well over a decade.
Thank you.
Thank you very kindly. Yeah. That's so cool.
So we better end there, I think. The only thing I can do after that is put my foot in my mouth. But you are a credit to the coaching industry. And I'm sure that many young people who are in need of influence have been enlightened and enhanced by yours. Okay, give it up, Jen. Alan Stein was one of our best guests. He literally rewrote what a coach would think of coaching from the standpoint of he coached some of the greatest basketball players of modern time and knew them.
And I think what's interesting about that interview is that you have a lot of people that make analogies to sports, and you certainly have a lot of motivational and inspirational speakers from the sports world. And sometimes it's easy to fall into cliches when it comes to the sports analogies. But I loved his idea of the coach's timeout and how little time you have and how managers should use that to be effective. It just felt more real to me.
If you have 2 minutes to talk to one of your salespeople, diehards, or you're a salesperson being spoken to, you want a fast answer. And you don't need to drag it on ad infinitum about some maudlin stupid event that happened to you 25 years ago in a, you know, in a donut shop. I think what you need to do is get to the point, show the solution, make the game plan understandable and implementable, and the timeout's over. Back on the court.
Wait a minute. So if you close your eyes, and guys, I want you, after I say this, to rewind. But if you close your eyes and listen to that and not think about it in a coach salesperson context, but think about it as a diehard salesperson, what you need to do when you're with your customer, that exact thing that you just said, Jeffrey, is so relevant.
Yeah.
Okay? You can give your customer in 2 minutes or 90 seconds everything they need to know, as long as you've shown up prepared, as long as you have the answers, the right way to help them. You can coach them, literally coach them through the sale.
I will guarantee you that 2/3 of the slides you show, you could have sent the day before and focus on pertinent information that helps the customer win instead of the bullshit about who you are.
But Jeffrey, I'm scared to do that. What if they cancel the meeting? I send them my slides.
You're right. That should tell you something right there.
You know what's also interesting about that interview? Alan talked about people spending too much time on social media trying to build connections rather than talking to people face-to-face. And just recently, the commissioner of the NBA, Adam Silver, came out and said that he's been talking to NBA players who are telling him they're very unhappy. And a lot of it has to do with the isolation that has come with and the criticism that has come with social media. So social media is a problem in terms of distractions for sports players. And it sounds like it's becoming a problem in sales as well.
I would say, though, that many of the athletes cause their own drama. You know, that one of the rules of social media should be don't post dumb shit and don't post vindictive shit.
Well,
so, you know, try to be informative rather than vindictive, and you're gonna win.
But how much are you creating your own drama? Not you, Jeffrey, but you, our diehard, you listening right now. How much are you creating your own drama, even if it's not like a war, social media war? I'm talking about drama in your own head, creating distractions because you're stuck in that comparisonitis trap where you're literally looking at other people mm-hmm. who are selling just like you are or coaching just like you are, and you're comparing yourself. Oh, they're doing a better job than me. Oh, they're making more money than me. Oh, they're talking to my competitor. Like, really? Like,
Stop paying attention
to what they're all doing
right.
And focus on yourself.
Focus on being the best person you can be. Focus on giving winning information to others, and you will get winning information back from your customer.
So the question you need to ask yourself is, what are you doing when you wake up? Is the first thing you do, is that looking at Instagram or LinkedIn or something like that? And is that really what you should be doing, or should you be setting your intention for the day?
And keep in mind that Alan Stein was coaching to win, not coaching to be right. And there's a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
He went out and did the best he possibly could be, or was the best he possibly could be for every one of his players, and arguably created some of the greatest basketball players of our time.
He did. And one of the other things he talked about was moving on to the next play if you had a bad one. So, like, not dwelling on the fact that you just lost that shot, you know, and just moving on and continuing on with the game so that you do have a chance of winning, so that you can put yourself in that winning position. And it's just exactly like losing a sale or getting turned down or getting some rejection or picking up a phone call and them not answering. Like, whatever that bad play is that you've had, how quickly do you recover?
That's correct. And you can't let your attitude be affected by one thing. There has to be an overview, like, hey, I'm here to drain the swamp. I'm here to win the ball game. I'm here to win the sale. That's it. Don't lose your primary objective because some little thing gets in your way. Now, I must say, in fairness to Doug, our amazing producer, he was listening with both ears on this one because he is a basketball fan. And he had Alan Stein as a prime prospective information provider, and as a result, played a major participation role in this podcast.
I'm just trying I'm just trying to be your sixth man.
I love when Doug participates, and if you guys love when Doug participates,
send me money.
Make sure you give us a 5-star review, and don't just mention us. Mention Doug,
right,
guys.
And if you're really wanting to understand who he is,
Venmo me.
He's a Michael
At
Jordan
Doug.
Sneaker. He's an Air Jordan sneaker size 11.
Oh man! All right. So, coming up this week on Sell or Die, we have a great lineup. We have Jason Dorsey back. We have a Sell or Die extra with him. We dove into so many topics in the main episode that there was almost no time left to air the rest of it. So we're airing it this week, and it's amazing. A large portion of this is focused on buying habits of millennials. Plus, we go deeper in how different millennials and Gen Z actually are when it comes to spending and saving habits. It's really interesting.
And please don't think of this as same old shit that you've read someplace else.
Oh, no.
Jason Dorsey is an original researcher who has accurate information about how to deal with people, whether they're your employees, your coworkers, or your customers.
Yeah, it's great intel.
If you have not yet listened to the original Jason Dorsey episode, we're going to link that up in the show notes. All right. Coming up, we also have Steve Woodruff. He's the founder of Clarity Consulting. Mm-hmm. And he talked about how to find the right fit in your career, how important it is, and really like a lot of searching to find that. How do you find that fit?
Yeah, he was good. I like that guy.
Yeah, me too. And then, of course, we have our Seller Die.
Exactly.
Best of.
Lots to pick from this week.
Oh, yeah.
Lots of really good stuff. And I recommend that you listen twice each day because we need the downloads.
No, but please, please share it with your friends. Thank you. All right.
All right.
We are off now to that donut shop you just mentioned.
And you are?
Until next time, I'm Jen Gluckow.
I'm Jeffrey Gittimer. I'm reminding you to get out there and sell something, even if your ass falls off.
Diehards. If you love the show, make sure you've subscribed.
And if you've subscribed, make sure you rate us on iTunes or give us a star on Overcast.
And if you've done all of that, tell a friend about the best sales podcast on the planet. Or better yet, tell both your friends.
And if you've done all of that, well, you're a true sell or diehard, and we thank you.
This has been a presentation of the Sell or Die Network. For more podcasts that you can take out into the street and turn into money, visit sellordienetwork.com.